And this half hour brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up, routine to difficult. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. I can tell you right now, they will give you a great buying experience, great inventory to choose from. You have a sales staff that works with you and wants to make sure that your needs are met, both financially as well as the vehicle. It's a great staff. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And time now for the opportunity to have great conversation with the outstanding Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
You bet. As always, it's great to be here. Hope you guys are enjoying all the training camp action so far.
Yeah, a lot of training camp action to this point. I know a lot of the teams go out and they right away do a free day in their stadium so the fans can get an opportunity to see their teams for the first time. They don't get to see much, but then again, it's the price of admission is free along the way. It's one of the great things that the NFL does along the way, that at least it has some fan outreach, because after that, you're paying through the nose.
Yeah, it's funny. Maybe this is where you're going with it. I just had a lengthy discussion with a bunch of people about it. Off the top of my head, I forget if it was Lane Kiffin or some college coach that in explaining why they were paying or they were charging now to let fans in to watch practice at the college level. Nothing is free now in the NIL world. I just think it's such a poignant quote. And it's something the NFL deals with all the time. They tend to let them in to give fans an experience, kind of hype up the team a little bit. And it's not as if there are other things that they can charge for. I mean, I know at La Trobe, the Steelers have, there's a bunch of stuff around that people can spend money on. So it's not like it's completely, without profit for the team. There's a lot of things that you can do within their own stadium, within their own environment. So they're good experiences. I think it's more fun to watch kind of how the hamburger is made in that sense. I don't think the Steelers would put backs on backers in front of people if they felt the need to charge for it. But that's definitely something that fans like to watch. That's a good event to watch. You can really see real football action. I know you and I have talked about it a bunch over the years. That's you're really seeing contact at a high level, at a largely uncontrolled level. Fans getting into the stadium, being able to get closer to that kind of thing. It's fun to watch if you're really into football, and a lot of things that you can get from that. And teams that open the doors up to fans, I think, are doing the right thing. But there are some that don't. They may not charge to get in necessarily, but they do have different events that are paid events throughout camp. And I have nothing against typically somebody making a buck off whatever they're doing, but I think you gotta there's a certain sense of responsibility to give back a little bit, to let people see what you're doing. People that support your product, patronize your product throughout the year, give them a little bit. I think some teams have a better sense of that than others.
Very quietly, this is one of those under-the-radar stories, but the FCC eliminated the blackout rule this week. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have it built into your TV contracts, but that's always been something with the NFL. If you didn't sell out within 72 hours of the game would be blacked out in your local market. And the FCC eliminated that today. I mean, now, does that mean that everybody can see whatever? But I thought it was a big move for anybody that wants to put their product on, quote, free TV or cable. What did you think?
If you want to put your product out nationally and you want to grow, you're essentially giving that away, because the thought is they don't have an easy opportunity to get to whatever stadium it is to watch it. So in other words, as far as the SEC goes, dude up in Minnesota can watch on SEC Network if that's offered by my cable provider.
Sure.
Somebody living in Georgia doesn't necessarily, Georgia's probably the bad example, Tennessee doesn't necessarily have the luxury of that because of the blackout rule. And in my mind, it's antiquated. That's just not simply how things work anymore. Good on them for eliminating it, just because it's silly. I understand. Again, they're going to make a dollar on what they're doing. I don't have a problem with that. But you're pulling in serious money with the TV contracts, and the issue is more that, as I understand it, that the schools get more of their gate than, you know, a higher percentage of their gate than they would the media contract that they have, as far as their network goes. So I can understand why you might try to protect that, but there comes a point that you're really, you know, we're talking deck chairs on the Titanic here. You want people locally to be able to see your product. Watching it on TV, with technology being what it is, and this is an argument that was stale 10 years ago, let alone today, people have, you know, high levels of convenience within their own homes. It's not just about going to see the game and paying the ticket that's the issue. It's more, this is just a better experience. And college football has been a part of the whole spear, not just the tip of it, but the entire spear of advancing the overall experience. It's not just about viewing it in person. There is absolutely a lot that goes into the broadcast, the entire digital experience, how much more that you can get at home that you might not be able to get at the stadium. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. That's up to your own choice. But there's plenty to be said about a diehard, if such a thing exists, a diehard Vanderbilt fan wanting to be able to watch their games without having to go to the stadium to do it. And it's not just a cost thing. That's usually what the argument is. Well, we don't want to, you know, have to pay the money to go do it. That might not even be the case. What if it's just a better experience? What if I don't want to go sit outside in Tennessee in 104 degree weather to watch the game? What if I'd rather just watch it at home? I would think that they would want to cater to that mentality as well, because frankly, it's 2024. I have a nice setup that I enjoy watching games at home. I don't want to have to go to the stadium to do that. I can totally understand why it's something that, you know, conferences, certainly at the NFL level as well as college football, all of them should embrace that mentality more than anything. And we know that the NFL has. It's not that they can't sell out. It's just that they pump a lot of money into the product at home. You know, broadcast holders spend a lot of money, and in turn, they invest a lot of money into their product to make a good at-home experience. That matters. You know, it's not just for the national fans. The local fans can get in on that as well. I think that is something other places in college football should cater more to.
By the way, how many TVs do you have on during a Sunday?
Three, and one of them has a split screen on. If we count the laptop hook up to a monitor as a TV, I've got three of them on.
Okay. And one of them is on the Steelers, I assume.
Of course, that'll be the main one. Yeah. Always, you got Red Zone on another, and then it's kind of I'll flip through and watch whatever I want. I will say YouTube TV has the multi screen, right, so I could put four games on the one TV. As weird as this sounds, that freaks me out too much. It's a little too much stimulation. And I'm not a big Red Zone guy. Now, I know that I'm probably not the norm. I know a lot of people that their entire viewing experience is Red Zone the entire day. I like to watch all of it. I like the build up. I like to see where everything is going. I would prefer to flip around to games on my own. That's just the control freak in me, I guess. But overall, it's fun to be able to see the league all operating at one time. I enjoy that part. I enjoy seeing the league in action, and kind of choosing what I want to watch at whatever time. So different things are on different games, and I'll change those up with the exception of the Steelers. And then the afternoon games, you know, there aren't as many, so the options aren't as good. You try to get as much of a look into this situation or that team or watching this guy play for a series as you can. And I feel it scratches the right itch as far as what you want to be able to watch, when you want to be able to watch it, but still get the full game experience, which is truly what I am. I mean, given the choice, I'd prefer just to watch one game. But since I don't have to do that anymore, I you know, kind of like to dip my toes around and see what else is out there. And I think that's definitely the younger generation where things are going, what we refer to as the sports bar experience. If you can get like five games on at once, some people like, you know, being able to kind of tilt their head back and forth and keep going. Some of it is good for me, but it, just one game. I don't like having multi-screens on one TV with other games on the others.
All right, so now let's get to the Steeler part of it. With camp now underway, and you're not going to solve this question in camp, but by the time we get to the third game of the season, what are a couple of concerns that they need to null out that by the time they get to game three, it'll give you an indication about what kind of team this actually is?
That's a great question, isn't it? I mean, I think it all comes down to that. And another topic we've discussed previously, you almost use week one as another preseason game. Yeah. It's not that it doesn't matter, but I guess you can make the exception of San Francisco last season. It looked phenomenal in week one when the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't. Most teams are not playing particularly well in week one. If you look at it just isolated, assignment-based, player-to-player, they don't look as sharp as you think that they would in a regular season game. You work through that. So if we want to call it a two-week dress rehearsal, by the end of that, though, you're exactly right. You have to have everything set. For the Steelers, I think it's really a question of what's their personnel assignment going to look like? You know, I think we have a sense, at least, that Arthur Smith wants to run bigger formations. He wants to likely, I don't want to say play small ball and run, but he's going to have a physical passing game, which is to say he's going to isolate tight ends often. They're going to run seams. I don't think they're going to do a whole lot of wide receiver isolation stuff. I think they're really going to want to run the ball and be creative in that, use motion to set up their running game. A lot of that is timing and precision. So I would say from a cleanliness of execution perspective, in other words, are they running these things without errors? Is their timing down? If they're getting beat at the point of attack, that's one thing. But are guys where they're supposed to be? Is the snap getting off cleanly? Is the handoff clean? All of these things that you need reps to develop. It's a new offensive line, new coordinator, again, a new quarterback. It's going to take some time to kind of develop that. I think week three is probably a good mark. I'm not sure this isn't the type of Steelers team we'll see offensively that doesn't it grossly outperform where it starts. You know, it could be a pretty rough start right away. It could be pretty blah, you know, something I guess we're kind of used to watching their offense the last couple of years. But I think they will get all of that down and they will improve. And that curve probably tilts in their favor by week three, or it should anyway, if we are in fact going to continue to blame Matt Canada for everything. It probably would take root by week three. If after week three it's still not there, then I think you've really got a problem in terms overall of just general direction with your team, because you can't be bottom basement offensively in the NFL for, you know, going on 60 some odd games, which is where the Steelers have been, really. I think we will see a lot of that take root on the later end by week three, but more coordination, more the cleanliness of everything that they're doing, the sharpness of what they're doing. I think by week three, that should be set in place.
How interested are you about the makeup of the offensive line, considering that the first two picks, Neil, were offensive linemen?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Two tackles, a position that they haven't drafted in 30 years or whatever it is. You are now in the also rarefied air of having to decide between two first-round picks of who's going to play on the left, who's going to play on the right. It's a great problem to have. It's one that I look forward to seeing the progress develop. But it's also interesting because between Broderick Jones and Troy Fontana, they're very different style players. Yeah. And they're very different in terms of experience and athleticism. Jones is a hyper elite athlete. You know, you saw it at times last season as he's coming along as a young player, high level, you know, top five in his position, level athlete, who's very raw. Didn't get a whole lot of snaps in college. He was that good. He was going to leave early. Obviously, a lot to like about him, build wise, functionality wise. You get a lot of great things out of him. Justified top 15 NFL pick. The Steelers were probably right to not play him as much. Fontanu is not the physical beast that Jones is, and again, very few are. Nothing against him at all. Jones, I don't think, Fontanu, I don't think a whole lot of people would say Jones was better than him as a college player. I think Fontanu is far more developed, much more aware of what he's doing, much more technically sound, and it's more like he's the guy who's ready to play now versus Jones, who's got a year on him over in the NFL. Whether they go right or left, you talk to any coach, there are thousands of reasons that you don't consider at all whether you're putting a guy on the left side or the right side. For me, it ultimately it matters, but you have to factor in the player's comfort. Now, if you're going to get the honest answer out of a player, and not be jaded by the fact that typically where we are now, and it's not nearly as sharp as it was 10 years ago, but where we are now, the left tackle tends to make a lot more money than the right tackle does. I don't think Troy Fontana wanted to get drafted by a team that was going to play him on the right side. I think he would have rather played on the left side. And I also think, though, that that's more of a contract thing. And there are plenty of teams that have paid both a right tackle and a left tackle because their offense is more ambidextrous. They're okay going one way or another. And with that, they solidify run blocking, pass protection on, you know, similar feet. And with that, it makes sure they can go either way with whatever play they're going to run. And it's because of the skill of their edge protector. So between the two of them, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could go. But if I was coaching them, and everyone's happy that I'm not, I honestly, Fontana would probably be my left tackle today over Jones. And some of that is an experience factor, but a large part of what I'm trying to do is going right-handed, running the ball, having my power side be on the right side. And Jones is just such a behemoth. He is so quick off the snap. He can climb to the second level in a way that Fontana can't. I've got really a primary running lane there and an outlet kind of backdoor screen option with Jones out there. Or, you know, if from an offensive perspective, too, you tend to want to motion right to left. We saw Jones last year doing stuff that Shanahan does in San Francisco with Trent Williams in putting Jones in motion. You know, they move him right to left. To do that, to have that kind of a power side, flip things around on a defense and give them a second to kind of figure out what's going on, those sorts of things are lethal. And you have that ability with Jones, so it's almost like, in a way, you can hide him on the right side, still have that dominant hand if you want to play the game right-handed, which I'm not saying you have to, but you can do that and still have a good backside protector and a backside option for you know, delays and things like that. There's just simply a lot of versatility that you have with the two choices that they've made. I you know, I'll contend forever. I don't think the Steelers expected Troy Fontana to be at 20 when they drafted him.
That's right.
I don't think their plan was to go get another tackle, but I also think he was a lot better than the other guys who were on the board. I didn't even think he was there. I heard his name. I was like, that guy hadn't been drafted yet?
Yeah.
Excellent pick, and they have a lot of very good problems to have with their offensive line now. You know, no team has put more into their offensive line in the last 2 years than the Steelers have. And I honestly think whatever way you want to go, I'm not sure it's really going to matter, because there are a lot of good things they're going to get from either one of them out on the field, to say nothing of the fact that you also get to remove Dan Moore from the field, which, you know, to be honest, is probably one of the biggest additions this offseason for any team. They might have one of the three best offensive lines in the league. this season. And you're going to see a lot of good things from both Jones and Fatano, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks so much, Neil.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
This half hour has been brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.